You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
Two bits of good news to start out the show this week. Good news. You remember good news, right? First, yesterday, the Supreme Court struck down a Louisiana law that would have regulated abortion clinics out of existence in that state. And if the law had been upheld, similar laws would have been passed in other red states. It was a 5-4 decision, with conservative Chief Justice John Roberts joining the four liberals in the majority. But make no mistake, a woman's right to choose, a woman's right to control her body, to decide when, if, and whether she wants to become a parent, still hangs by a thread. There are more abortion cases making their way toward the court, because there are always abortion cases making their way toward the court, because this is America, and Canada got the French, and Australia got the convicts, and we got the Puritans and the short end of that stick, and consequently, the culture wars here are never going to end. By which I mean to say, don't get complacent. DGC. Nothing about the usually reliably anti-choice Chief Justice's decision yesterday, in which he cited a legal technicality, not an epiphany, nothing about his decision yesterday prevents him from voting with the conservatives to ban abortion in some other case. Which is why, even with three good recent decisions from the court on gay and trans employment protections, on the Dreamers program, and now on abortion, we can't get complacent. DGC. We have to show up, and we have to vote in November, and we have to vote for Joe Biden, who is way ahead in the polls right now, but now ain't November, and even if he's 10 points up in November, we still gotta vote, or he won't win. And the Republicans? Yeah, sensing they're gonna lose this election, they're gonna throw up as many barriers to voting as they can. So, register now. Order your absentee ballot now. And if you have to go to the polls on Election Day in November, and you live in a red state or a swing state, and some of those red states are looking pretty swingy right now. Hey there, Texas. If you live in one of those states, be sure to bring a bottle of water and something to eat, because you're probably going to be in that line for a long time. Still, good news. And with all the bad news coming at us lately, including the news that the European Union is going to ban Americans from entering the EU thanks to our lethally incompetent response to the coronavirus pandemic, with so much bad news coming at us lately, we have to take the good news where we can get it. Oh, and I know European vacations aren't high on anybody's priority list right now, but for those of us with loved ones overseas, it's not the beaches or the ruins we miss. Okay, one more item of good news to start the show. Two black gay men, New York City Councilman Richie Torres and progressive lawyer Mondaire Jones, they won their primary races for U.S. House seats in New York last week. Overwhelmingly, both are favorites to win in the general election in the fall, and they will become the first black gay members of Congress. Even sweeter, Richie Torres, who represents the Bronx and the New York City Council, he beat notorious homophobe Ruben Diaz Sr., former state senator, current member of the New York City Council, has compared homosexuality to bestiality and accused gay people of running a nefarious conspiracy to control New York City. Diaz had greater name recognition and outpolled Torres early in the race, but Torres handed Diaz his ass. No homo, phobes, will be repping New York City in Congress next year. Congrats to both Torres and Jones for taking names, kicking ass, and making history. All right, coming up on today's show, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's. On the Micro and Magnum editions of the Savage Lovecast, Brandon Woodard joins us. He's a state rep in Kansas, in the Kansas House. He joins us to talk all things Kansas. And on the Magnum, superstar public health official Dr. Dimitri Daskalakis joins us. He is the man behind New York City Health's response to the pandemic, all of their advice about how to navigate sex and having sex during this pandemic. He joins us to discuss everything New York City Health has been doing, and I'm very excited that I got to talk to him for today's show. He's on the Magnum. Again, the Magnum. You subscribe at SavageLovecast.com. Twice as much show, more guests, no ads. SavageLovecast.com. We appreciate all of our Magnum subscribers so much. All that coming up on today's show. This episode is brought to you by Allform, premium customizable sofas and chairs shipped right to your door. For 20% off your perfect sofa, go to allform.com/savage. This episode is brought to you by Helix Sleep, the best mattress for your individualized comfort. Right now, my listeners get up to $200 off all mattress orders at helixsleep.com/savage. This episode is brought to you by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Check out this week's menu and get $30 off your first order with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/savage.
Hey, Dan, I have a quarantine sex story for you. I decided to spend quarantine with my parents. They live in a rural small town and they're very conservative Christians. And when I got there, I matched with a guy on Tinder who was doing the exact same thing. After 14 days of knowing that we hadn't seen anyone else, we decided to meet up and we decided it was a really good fit for a regular, exclusive quarantine hookup scenario. We had nowhere to go, given that we're both staying with our parents, even though we're in our mid-30s. So we started hooking up in the back of my SUV on the regular. We would meet up by the lake, have a beer, hop in the back of my car, do our thing and go our separate ways. And it was fantastic. And we felt like teenagers. I found myself at one point with a giant hickey on my neck that I had to hide from my conservative parents as I snuck around their house in my mid-30s, and it was just so fun to feel like a teenager again. Fun bonus, we figured out that those handles that are in your car are great for getting leverage when you're riding someone on top in a confined space.
A giant hickey? Yeah, you are doing it like teenagers more than just doing it in the car. Hickeys are something you outgrow or you move those bruises elsewhere, more interesting places on the body than the neck. Thank you for calling and sharing your quarantine sex story. We welcome people to call in and share their quarantine sex stories, how you're making it work, how you're passing this time. Also, if you just have a sexual success story, we're really enjoying beginning the shows now with something positive, somebody just sharing something before we get to the conflict drama and the AI TAs that constitute the rest of the show. So please keep them coming.
Hey, Dan. I'm hoping that you can help me with this conundrum. So I'm on a road trip with my very, very pretty friend who I've had a crush on for a very long time. We have been talking about living together. We're very compatible in that way. We both have also talked about not sleeping together. I've never talked that much about not sleeping with someone before and then slept with them. So we did that on this road trip, and it was kind of a weird hookup. He was super reluctant, and that felt kind of icky. Like, it was like one of those like horny mornings where you wake up and you're like half asleep and you are just like in sex already. But like, he wasn't necessarily kissing me back, and I told him I felt icky about that. It happened a couple of times, and he was like, well, then maybe we just shouldn't hook up anymore, which bummed me out because, you know, I was hopeful because I've had a crush on this guy for a very, very long time, basically since I met him. So we're at camping at my friend's place, and I wake up this morning and he's not in the tent. He's sleeping with my friend. And I just felt this like super icky wave of jealousy, like very pukey. And yeah, I just wanted to ask you how to get over this jealousy and how to stop like holding out hope for us to get together. Like, I don't even really want to date him. I just want to like be fucked by him in this like passionate and beautiful way that I know he's capable of, that I feel like I didn't really get to see, which kind of makes me feel like I got unscrewed in a way.
She was super reluctant. I fucked her anyway. She wasn't kissing me back. She didn't seem terribly enthusiastic. I fucked her anyway. If we reverse the genders on this call, everyone's heads would now be exploding. And my head is exploding a little bit. Recognizing that, you know, if the genders were reversed, there's an implicit threat of male violence, that the woman is sometimes, you know, deferring to the man, not wanting to say no directly, afraid that the man would escalate to physical violence if she said no. And some women will have sex that they don't want to have because they fear worse. This dude is having sex with you at your insistence that he does not want to have. And the fact that you have a crush on him and you would like to have sex with him and you would like him to make love to you passionately in a way that you know he's capable of, even though that is not how he makes love to you, because it's not what he's interested in from you. He's not interested in you sexually or romantically, is not okay. This is incredibly fucked up. There isn't the implicit threat of male violence. There is, though, a consent violation here, a refusal on your part to read his body language, read his reluctance, and withdraw. I don't mean take his dick out of you. I mean stop expecting him to have sex with you. Withdraw from any sort of sexual expectations. The dude does not want to fuck you. The dude is not attracted to you. I don't know why he's fucking you anyway. I don't know why he's hanging out with you when you're putting him under this pressure to be sexual with you. And rather than just saying no, maybe he's one of those people who has a hard time saying no to people. I'm actually one of those people who has a hard time saying no to people sometimes. Maybe he's just giving you a little bit and hoping you get off his back and his dick. But it's never going to be satisfying sex, and you're always going to feel bad about it, because you should feel bad about it. Because what you're doing is kind of bad. Whether your intents are bad, whether you have the self-awareness to realize what you're doing is bad, it's bad. And the last thing you should do is live with this guy who's going to make you unhappy. He's going to date and fuck other women that he's excited about dating and fucking. He's not excited about dating and fucking you. He has made that clear. Stop wasting your time and your pussy on him and resolve in the future that when you're with someone who seems super reluctant, that is not enthusiastic consent. When you're with somebody who doesn't really want to kiss you back and you're fucking them anyway, that is not enthusiastic consent. That is not sex that you should be having. It's certainly not sex that they want to be having. And in the moment, maybe you'll go for it because you're horny and it's the morning or whatever your rationalizations were. But after the fact, you're going to feel bad about it, and you should, and they're going to feel bad about it. They felt bad about it when it started. Don't fuck this guy. Don't live with this guy. Process your feelings of jealousy on your own. We don't get everything or everyone we want. And this guy, you can want him, but he doesn't want you back. Go find a guy who wants you, who fucks you without reluctance, and who kisses you back. And stop sex pesting this guy. Here at the Savage Lovecast, we spend a lot of time talking about how to improve what goes on in your bed, on your mattress, but we don't talk about the bed itself all that much. I'm here to advise you to get yourself a Helix Sleep mattress. It is the best bed you could possibly own for absolutely everything you want to do in your bed. Helix Sleep has a quiz that takes just 2 minutes to complete and matches your body type and sleep preferences to the perfect mattress for you. Everybody's unique. Helix knows that. So they have several different mattress models to choose from. They have soft, medium, and firm mattresses. Mattresses great for cooling you down if you sleep hot, and even a Helix Plus mattress for plus-sized folks. Everything is made right here in America. Everything has a 10-year warranty, and you get to try it out for 100 nights risk-free. If you don't love Helix, they'll pick it up for a full refund. Helix also, and this is what makes them near and dear to my heart, they designed their mattresses with sex in mind. All of their mattresses are hybrids, meaning they have both foam and springs in them, unlike so many other companies. And having springs in your mattress rather than just foam keeps you from sinking in too much and gives you the perfect level of bounce that you're going to need. Their high-quality springs are incredibly quiet and won't sag even during your non-sleeping mattress activities. Helix mattresses also have strong edge support thanks to their reinforced coil perimeter. This keeps things stable, so you never have to worry about rolling off the bed no matter what you're doing on it. Terry and I took the quiz and we got a mattress with a medium firmness because we tend to move around a lot at night. We've been sleeping on our Helix all year and we both love it. But you don't have to take our word for how lovable Helix mattresses are. Helix was awarded the number one best overall mattress of 2020 by GQ and Wired magazine. Go to helix.com/savage, take their 2-minute sleep quiz, and they will match you to a customized mattress that will give you the best sleep of your life and the perfect surface for your non-sleep activities on your mattress. They're also offering up to $200 off and 2 free pillows at helixsleep.com/savage. Support the show, get a great mattress, and get yourself $200 off and 2 free pillows at helixsleep.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 31-year-old queer pansexual from the East Coast. I am married also to a queer pansexual man. We have been married for almost 3 years. I am a young stepmom. His first marriage, he had 3 kids. So I am a young stepmom. I'm 31 and my oldest stepchild is 20. They're really cool kids. My question to you is about step-parent porn, step-son, step-daughter, step-sibling porn. I initially was like, this is just so awkward and uncomfortable, and I get transgressive thoughts and how they can be erotic, but as a step-parent now, I'm like, okay, no, hands down, big, fat, all capitals, nope, never going to watch that. Well, yesterday, I was masturbating, as I find myself doing often during the pandemic, while my husband's at work, and I looked at a porn that was titled something like Lesbian DP Three-Way. But when I started watching it, it turned out to be a step family of people fucking. And I was actually, like, not turned off by it. So my question to you is, one, does that mean that there are, like, I know myself and know that there are no latent feelings towards my stepchildren. I find that repulsive. But what is it with this kink about step families fucking? Why is it the most popular form of pornography in the country? I have a few friends who do porn, and they are just doing step porn, like step family porn. Like, what is it about that? Is that, what is going on? If you could provide some insight into that, I just find that personally repulsive. Maybe not so repulsive anymore, actually, because I wasn't like I turned it off or anything. I quite enjoyed the actual sex, but if you could shed some light, that would be great.
This porn I stumbled over, I was not turned off by it. Kind of odd way of saying the porn you stumbled over turned your crank, and it turned your crank because it's transgressive and it's taboo. And in a way, that that step-parent, step-child genre of porn allows for transgression and taboo to really soak into what is otherwise of usually vanilla, missionary, heterosexual, standard off-the-shelf sexual activities encounter. But adding that veneer of these are step-parents and step-children, perhaps very close in age. Sometimes it's the much younger stepmother and the step-son or stepdaughter who's much closer to her age than her husband, their biological father. It just takes all of this basically normal heterosexual sexual activity and makes it really fucking freaky and awful. And there's something about that freaky awfulness that gets people's blood pumping in a way that is at once easy to understand. The porn turns you on because it's transgressive. In a way that's at once easy to understand, the porn turns you on because it's transgressive and it turns you crank. And hard to understand, why this? Because in reality, as most people who enjoy incest porn will tell you, almost all of them will tell you, they don't fantasize about their actual relatives. That thinking about their actual siblings or step-parents or step-children or actual children does nothing for them. But something about this porn really fucking works. And maybe it's the fetishization of family relationships and the nuclear family over the last 100 years. I don't know. I can't answer your question. I don't know why this porn turns you on. I think that's a question you might want to ask yourself. The get out of jail free card answer, or get out of jail quickly answer, is it's just so fucked up. It is so transgressive. But unlike the super transgressive fucked up porn out there, unlike Two Girls, One Cup or insanely kinky porn or transgressive, you know, in the bodily fluids or excretia manner, this is extremely fucked up, basically vanilla hetero porn. And I think that's what has made it so popular, because it takes off-the-shelf standard, not a problem, not transgressive sex. And just with that added complication of a step-parent, step-child relationship, it makes it super fucked up. And I just want to highlight one thing about your call that I think is really interesting. This is not who you are. You would never fuck your stepchild. There is a lot of our erotic imaginations, our erotic inner lives, our fantasies, which are sometimes expressed through porn consumption only, that is about violating our sense of self and who we are. This is not who I am. The cliche example is the very powerful businessman who goes to the dominatrix and crawls and begs and has his ass whipped. That's not who he is most of the time. He's acting that fantasy out. It's not who he is. It's a violation of the self that he presents to the world, but also in a lot of ways, the self he presents to himself, the story about himself he tells himself. And there's a story about yourself that you tell yourself, which is that you are a good and decent and loving person and a good and decent and loving spouse and a good and decent and loving step parent. And this is not who you are. And instead of that being why this doesn't turn you on or shouldn't turn you on, that is why it does. All right, you already heard me talk about my Helix mattress and enthuse about it because I really do love it. And there is exciting news. Helix has gone beyond the bedroom and started making sofas. They've just launched a new company called Allform, and they're making premium customizable sofas and chairs that they ship right to your door. What makes an Allform sofa really cool? Well, for starters, it's the easiest way on Helix that you can customize a sofa using premium materials at a fraction of the cost of traditional stores. You pick your fabric, all spill, stain, and scratch resistant. You pick the sofa color, the color of the legs, sofa size, and shape to make sure it's perfect for you and perfect for your home. They've got armchairs and love seats all the way up to an 8-seat sectional, so there's something for everyone. And you can always start small and buy more seats later on if you want your Allform sofa to grow and change with you when you move. Allform sofas are, again, delivered directly to your home with fast and free shipping. In the past, if you wanted to order a sofa, it could take weeks or months to arrive, and you would need someone to come and assemble it for you in your home. Allform, they will get you a sofa in just 3 to 7 days, arrives in the mail, and you can assemble it yourself in just a few minutes. No tools required. We have an Allform love seat set up here in the Lovecast studio for our guests. It's a simple, cool, light blue color, and Nancy set it up with the greatest of ease. And if getting a sofa without trying it out in the store first sounds a little risky, although going to the store now is a little risky, you don't need to worry. You get 100 days to decide if you want to keep it. That's more than 3 months. And if you don't love the sofa, they will pick it up for free and give you a full refund. They also have a forever warranty, literally forever. To find your perfect sofa, check out allform.com/savage. And Allform is offering 20% off all orders for our listeners at allform.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. 39-year-old gay male here. Not so much a sex question, but more of a situation we're in and professional question, I guess I would say. I work for a company that is going through some pretty big reorganization efforts. And one of the things that I have to contemplate is whether I would be willing to move to Kansas to keep my job. I've been working for my company for over 15 years. My partner of 18 years and I have both worked for this company. He's been there for 10 years. He found out that his position is actually safe and he is able to work remote. So he could move with me to Kansas. But my dilemma is this. I have no friends, no family back east. We're very close to his family, who's right in our same area. We see them typically weekly. And usually, the area that I live in has a decent amount of opportunity. Financial security, though, is very important to me. And being in this current COVID-19 world that we're in, the idea of being unemployed with millions of other Americans is really a scary thought. And the idea of moving to Kansas is an equally scary thought. So I don't know what to do. Any advice on how you might tackle this situation? You know, I thought I could stay there for a couple of years and then come back when the economy rebounds. But it's Kansas.
Joining me by phone to help tackle this question, Brandon Woodard is a Democratic member of the Kansas House of Representatives, an openly gay man. He was elected to the Kansas House in 2018, one of two members of the LGBT community who were elected that year, both of them firsts. Brandon, thank you for jumping on the phone. Or Representative Woodard, thank you for jumping on the phone.
Brandon is just fine. Thanks for having me.
So a quick point of order for people who are confused, like I am confused by this constantly. You live in and represent Kansas City, Kansas, which is not to be confused with Kansas City, Missouri, which is right next door.
Right. So I'm in actually Lenexa, which is one of the suburbs of the Kansas City area.
That's very confusing. Why? If you're going to be twin cities like Minneapolis and St. Paul, take different names. If it was Minneapolis and Minneapolis, but they were different cities, everyone would be annoyed by that, even if they were in the same state. What gives? Why can't you rename one of these?
You know, we'll work on it for sure. I think if we're going to have Kansas City in the name, we get it in the Kansas side then.
Okay, well, it's just that, you know, us coastal elites want the flyover states to be less confusing to us than they already are. All right, let's get to this caller's question. He's a 39-year-old gay man. His company is moving some jobs, including his, to Kansas City. So score one for the Kansas Economic Development Department that lured his company away. And his husband can come with him is not a problem, but he's worried about Kansas. He's worried about living in Kansas. As a gay man and an elected official in Kansas, what does he need to know? What might make him feel better about moving to Kansas for a few years?
Well, in addition to being an inclusive state, we are all also just Midwest nice. So while we have seen a number of anti-LGBT bills passed in recent years, in 2018, we elected two openly LGBT members to the legislature. We sent an openly LGBT congressperson to the U.S. House. And we have a Democratic governor who's our 12th one and supports pro-LGBT policies.
Your 12th Democratic governor.
Yes.
This is the only governor of Kansas that I can recall is Sam Brownback, who was a disaster, who, you know, instituted the full Republican plan / ideology dogma about taxes and slashing public funding and schools and teachers and hospitals and health clinics, and basically drove the state into such a deep ditch that the voters turned around and elected a Democratic governor. I thought she was your first Democratic governor because Kansas has such a reputation as a blood red state.
Right. Well, I think we learned the error of our ways. And in fact, this governor's first action, the first day on the job, was to reinstate LGBT worker protections for state employees.
So that's a good sign.
We're headed in the right direction. We just got to make sure we continue down that path. But Kansas is a great place.
Is it a great? Okay, so beyond the politics of it, that, you know, there are openly gay elected officials in Kansas, sent one to the House of Representatives in D.C. You have a Democratic governor, which is a reaction to the shitty Republican governor you all just fucking coughed up like a hairball. What else is there about Kansas that recommends it as a place to live and work? And do you think this caller could endure it for just a few years?
I think they could absolutely endure it. A lot depends on what part of the state they're in. The Kansas City area of Kansas does make up 1/4 of the state's population. So I've been excited to see business grow here in this part of the state, but also central and down in the Wichita area as well. So it would depend, I think, where they're going. But generally, people are welcoming here. They're nice. They're excited to get to know folks. There's a lot of stuff to do, whether that's recreational, outside, a ton of great parks here. We've got a lot of great land, so there's a lot of stuff to do. And also the proximity to Kansas City, Missouri, there's a lot of great things to do as well. So in addition to a lot of fun stuff to do here on the ground, when COVID's over, you also are connected to an airport that you can get anywhere in the country in 3 hours or less. So there's a lot of great stuff to do here, but also very connected to the rest of the country as well.
You're really centrally located. You could be in New York in 3 hours. And when I want to go to New York, that's a 7 or 8 hour flight and a nightmare. 3 hours sounds like a nice, shorter, more endurable flight to New York. Less time to get exposed to COVID. So what's the gay scene like, or can you not talk about that as an elected Kansas official?
There are, you know, statistics say 1 in 10 people. So in a population, a metro area in Kansas City of 2 million people, you've got a lot of homos, right? We've got a great LGBT network here. We've got chambers of commerce across the state that are focused on LGBT causes, and just a lot of great opportunities to get to know one another, whether it is politically or just going out to bars and getting a drink with your friends.
I've been out to some of the gay bars in Kansas City, Missouri, and Kansas City, Kansas, on a couple of my speaking tour visits, and they seemed populated with fun and exciting looking guys. So, you know, assuming this West Coast gay married male couple is in an open relationship like most West Coast married gay male couples are, they're still going to get laid.
They will have a great group of Midwest folks to meet, for sure.
All right. You and I have met before. I didn't realize that when we reached out to each other on Twitter. We've met before.
Yeah. So when I was involved as a student leader at the University of Kansas, we had Gayprol, which we supported every year, which was basically Pride Month on campus. And we had everything from 1 year, which started out as just a brown bag lunch drag show, to extending it to a full month while I was there. We had our first It Gets Better month, and we were very excited to have you on campus for a talk and a book signing.
So campus activism, LGBT campus activism was where you cut your teeth in organizing and in politics.
Indeed. Being the first openly LGBT student body leader, student body vice president, which we never really even talked about in the campaign, and it didn't come up a whole lot in my campaign for state representative, but I kind of got to check out the state house and learn how to get things moving through the process through being involved on campus. And so I was really excited to have that opportunity.
When I talk to people about the country, one of the things I often say is there's no such thing as a blue state. There's only red states, but some of them have big blue dots in them. Some of them have big blue cities like Seattle, Washington. When you look geographically, you look at those voting patterns that the president prefers because it makes him look like a winner. It's mostly a sea of red with some blue sprinkled around. There are blue dots in Kansas, right?
There are, or there's dots like the seat I represent, which voted for Mitt Romney and then turned around and voted for Hillary Clinton a couple years later. So there are blue dots all over for sure, but there's a lot of red in Kansas. If you look at 105 counties, I think maybe 10 of them went blue last time, but we still elected the governor through that because population is concentrated in certain parts of the state.
So maybe the caller, instead of hearing Kansas as a red state and fearing all of Kansas, needs to look at a map of Kansas that breaks the vote down by precinct or county and then make sure that wherever his company is sending him, wherever he and his husband choose to live during their time in Kansas, which who knows, maybe it'll be a few years, maybe they'll fall in love with it and stay forever, that they go to a place that's one of the blue dots in that red state.
Absolutely. And they should feel free to reach out. I will, with a mask on from social distance, welcome them to Kansas with open arms.
Thank you so much. Brandon Woodard, Democratic member of the Kansas House of Representatives, currently campaigning for re-election, and good luck to you. We wish you the best.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Home cooking matters now more than ever, and with Blue Apron, you can have peace of mind by getting fresh quality ingredients delivered straight to your door, all of them that you need, so you can cook delicious, easy meals in the comfort of your home. Blue Apron takes the guesswork out of dinner, also removes from your day a run to the grocery store, and you can know your ingredients are being prepared and packaged with the highest attention to quality and safety. And with their commitment to transparency and reducing waste, Blue Apron has your back in more ways than one. We're big fans of Blue Apron at my house. As I've said before, Blue Apron taught me how to cook. With Blue Apron, you choose from a variety of chef-designed, ready-to-cook meals with perfectly portioned ingredients, lots of flavorful options, all sent to your door, and you too can acquire the kitchen confidence that maybe you don't have right now. Prices start as low as $7.49 per serving. It's flexible. You can skip weeks. You can cancel at any time. I love that Blue Apron takes care of meal planning for us so that we can kick back and not have to worry about it. All their meals can be prepared in 40 minutes or less, some as low as 20 minutes. It really is like bringing the restaurant home. Even if there's no occasion, it's affordable and a more personal way to make any meal feel special. And listen to this, over 85% of Blue Apron packaging is recyclable and 41% of their packaging materials are made from recycled content. They're also the first meal kit company to transition to drain-safe, fully recyclable ice packs. Feel good about your choices. Create delicious meals at home with Blue Apron. Find comfort in the kitchen with Blue Apron and enjoy delicious home-cooked meals. Check out this week's menu and visit blueapron.com. That's blueapron.com. Blue Apron, feed your soul.
Hi, Dan and the tech-savvy Abriskuth. I'm a 30-something bisexual female living in the Pacific Northwest. I have a two-part question. The first one is about me and my husband. He has a fetish, I would call it, with breast milk. He often talks about sucking my nips or sucking my breast milk. I've never been pregnant and we don't have any children, so he doesn't really understand, I don't think, what having breast milk and lactating is all about. It's kind of a messy endeavor and it is, in fact, milk. But he always says, like, I can't wait to suckle your nips. And I find it kind of weird, and it's not at all a turn on for me. I don't really say anything, but one time he directly said something about it, about sucking my breast milk. And I said, you know, you can't actually do that. That's not how it works. And he said, really? I can't suck them just once? I felt really bad, like this was a big disappointment for him. So I said, sure, you can do it just once to see what it's like. But I'm just wondering, is this a thing? Is this something that's like deep-seated in his weird reptile brain where he, I don't know, started to fetishize and sexualize this? I feel like there's such a stigma against sexualizing women's breasts that are really intended for the purpose of feeding their children. But at the same time, I don't want to shame him for obviously this desire that he shared with me and has really been vulnerable about. Just wondering about your thoughts on it.
I get the impression from the first two-thirds of your call that your husband really doesn't understand how breasts work. But then, at the end, it sounds like you don't understand how breasts work either. First of all, breasts are sexualized. And while it's stigmatized and should be stigmatized to make women feel uncomfortable about their breasts or stare at women's breasts, people are attracted to these secondary sex characteristics, like, you know, muscles on a dude, breasts on a woman. And there are a lot of evolutionary biologists who theorize that breasts became larger and more prominent as a, you know, a selected for mating advantage over time as we began to walk upright. And instead of showing each other our big round asses, we started showing each other our breasts. And women who had, you know, prominent breasts that looked a little bit like asses were preferred partners. And over tens of thousands of years or millions of years of humanoid evolution, boobs and sexualized boobs. You don't want people panting after your breasts in public if you are a breast haver, and that people should feel bad about. But yeah, they are sexualized. They are thoroughly and completely sexualized. And they were thoroughly and completely sexualized as Homo sapiens evolved and long before the first cities were founded or human culture took root or the first religion was invented. So yeah, you just need to get over that. And allowing your husband to suckle your breasts just once isn't going to bring your milk in. So he's not going to get to taste human breast milk, as I hope you know, if he's allowed to suckle your tits, allowed to suck on your tits or play with your tits, which I would think your husband would already have been able to do at some point. Breast milk comes in after pregnancy, after birth. There is a hormonal response that like kicks all that breast factory shit in the boobs into gear. There is not breast milk leaking out of breasts. The fatty tissues in breasts are there to help produce the breast milk. They aren't breast milk waiting to be sucked out of the tits, just quickly. If you have a partner who talks about a part of your body in a way that makes you uncomfortable or that just isn't hot, like, I can't wait to suckle your nips and I want to suck on your breast milk, you can just be direct with them and say, that's not sexy to me. The way you're talking about that part of my body doesn't turn me on. That's not hot, dirty talk to me. That just kind of skeeves me out. So if you want to talk about my boobs and appreciate my boobs, find some other words. Keep using your words, just use different ones. I think of a male friend, a gay male friend the other day who wrote me because he was freaked out because some guy was fucking him and started calling his ass a cunt. And in the moment, it wasn't turning him on. But in the moment, he didn't want to ruin things for the guy who was ruining things for him by saying anything. And after the fact, he was too shy to say anything and he still wanted to hook up with the guy. Well, he needs to obviously say something if the guy's going to start calling his butthole a cunt while he's getting fucked. My friend listens. I'm giving him this advice for free. Bonus, gratis, again. And it's the same advice for you. Say to your husband, I love that you love me. I love that you're sexually attracted to me. It's fine that you're into my breasts. Breasts are things that a secondary sex characteristic that most men are into, straight men particularly. But you can't keep using these phrases, these sentences. I want to suckle your nips. That turns me off. That makes me not want you to get anywhere near my tits. And then maybe you can suggest some ways that he could talk about your tits that would turn you on, that would make you feel appreciated and attractive and a little bit less like a dairy. And jumping back for a second, I assume you and your husband play with your tits during sex, that he touches your tits. It's an erogenous zone. Most people enjoy having their tits played with during sex, and not just women, not just females, also males. Men like to have their nipples and tits played with and touched during sex. It can be intensely erotic. It is, for many people, what gets them there. It is the difference between sort of coasting along, fucking, and climaxing is a little bit of attention to the tits, men and women, during sex. So I hope you're already getting that kind of attention and allowing your husband to enjoy your breasts. Anyway, good luck.
Hi, Dan. Long-time listener, first-time caller here. While we're on the topic of systemic injustices, there's a question that's been on my mind for some time, which is it sexist for me to offer to pay for women? I think I've done this pretty consistently whenever I'm out with just one other person, as long as that person identifies as a woman and is in the same age range as me. Usually it's been in the context of dating or relationships, but upon reflection, it's also happened with platonic female friends, regardless of sexual orientation. I guess, you know, if I offer to pay for male friends, which happens far less consistently, it's usually in the context of some sort of verbal arrangement that expects them to pay equally, like, you know, let me get the first round. When it comes to systemic sexism, I could, in theory, see arguments both that this is part of the problem and also that it's part of the solution. I'm also not one of those assholes that says you can't have it both ways when it comes to embracing both feminism and gender-specific dating traditions at the same time. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on this.
The person who asks the other person out on the date pays. With friends, you take turns. If you're going to pick up the check this time, they pick up the check next time, or you put your credit cards down on the table together and you split it. If you have a lot more money than someone, if you are employed and a friend of yours is unemployed, particularly at this moment, it can be a kind gesture to treat them, to pick up the check without an expectation that next time they're obligated to pick up the check. Next time you can split it, or next time you'll pick it up again because you enjoy their company and they're struggling. And if you're not struggling at this moment, you can be kind and decent and take them out. It's easy to say the person who asked the person out on the date pays from gay land, because in gay land, the dude asks the dude out. And sometimes you're the dude who asked the dude out, and sometimes you're the dude who got asked out. And it can somehow shake out to feel a little bit more fair. In straight land, it is customary, it is the default that the man asks the woman out. So men are going to wind up paying for more dates and meals and goings out than women are going to. And I think that's, in a way, unavoidable. You know, it's a little bit like, brings to mind the father walking the daughter down the aisle and presenting the daughter to the fiancé, soon-to-be husband, waiting for her at the altar. It is a property transaction. It is symbolically, it harkens back to a time when daughters were property, properties of the fathers, and wives were property, property of the husband. And this was one man gifting his property, this female, to another man. And that survives in a lot of people's wedding ceremonies. And that ritual, with all of its sort of evil backstory, survives in a lot of people's wedding ceremonies. People go through the motions of that. There's other meanings that have been attached to it over time about love and compassion and two families coming together and whatever else. And often you see the mother and father walk the daughter down the aisle now. And although the roots of it are it's rooted in some very deep and awful shit, the expression of it now is a little less tainted by that deep and awful shit. I think the same can be said of the sort of gender imbalance and who asks who out for a date and who pays. It is rooted in some, you know, gendered shit that a lot of people have moved past, but it is a formality, an expectation. Women, for the most part, don't ask men out. If men wait around for women to ask them out, they're not going to get asked out, which gives women fewer opportunities to be the person who asked the person out and therefore is the person who will pay. And so, yeah, suck it up. Put that credit card on the table. Pay for your dates. All right, before we get to your response calls, let's read your tweets. First up, Uncle Jody, craft beer drinker, tweeted to all of his followers that he was listening to the Savage Lovecast. Thank you, Uncle Joe, for the shout out. All right. Ari Evangelista tweets, I tried to Google cut queen humiliation pig, but was not successful. But now I know all the cuts you can get out of a single hog, laughing through the tears emoji. We took a call recently from a woman who described herself as a cuck queen, not a cut queen. A cuck queen. A cuckold, of course, is a man who gets off on the humiliation of watching his wife or girlfriend get fucked by another man. A man who gets off on watching his husband or boyfriend get fucked by another man, also a cuckold. But a woman who likes to watch her partner get with someone else is known as a cuck queen. I think it's a little like actor, actress, or waiter, waitress. It's not a term that needs to be gendered. So I support going with cuckold, cuck for short, to mean just anyone who gets off on being humiliated, watching their partner get fucked by someone else. Becca Wagner tweets, when at Fake Dan Savage answers your question on the Savage Lovecast and says exactly what you were hoping to hear. Three clap, clap, clap emojis. All right. Not everyone can say the same. Some callers don't get the answers they were hoping for. But it is often the case that when people who call into shows like mine or send letters to advice columnists like me, they already know what they need to do and just want someone else to tell them to do it. And I'm always happy to be that guy. And finally, UK refugee tweets, After a pretty crappy day, so good to hit play on Savage Lovecast and feel the theme tune soothe, excite, and wrap me in a familiar feeling of rationality and honesty. Thanks, at Fake Dan Savage. You're welcome, at UK Refugee. All right, if you want me to read your tweet on an upcoming episode of the Savage Lovecast, be sure to use the hashtag Savage Lovecast. And now your response calls.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling in response to the caller that is fucking this guy who has a gorgeous dick, but is sort of racist and sexist. And I noticed that you mentioned that he's from Middle East. So I'm gathering he's an immigrant. And I want to say, as an immigrant myself, that the cultural barrier is a lot bigger than many people understand. So we come to this country and our understanding of the culture and our language, like our choice of words, is vastly shaped by Hollywood and the pop culture that America exports. And it's very sexist, it's very racist. And by just coming here and, you know, getting a job, maybe even going to school, doesn't miraculously make you acculturated. So I would just encourage you, if you see a good person behind a big dick, give him a chance, but have a conversation, assuming that he's not coming from the same space as you are culturally. He may come from a country that brainwashes us into many bad beliefs. So maybe turn him into good podcasts. And if you have that bandwidth, spend a little bit more time acculturating this new American, whatever.
Hey, Dan, this is a response call to the man who asked about straight dudes being default doms. Your response was solid. However, I feel it's really important to include that there are so many different ways to dom a guy. There's face sitting. There's penetrating their mouths with your hands. There's a lot of sexy, fluid, hot, dominant stuff that doesn't just involve penetrating their anal orifice, which is, you know, great. And yet, there are so many ways to do it. And I just want to make sure everyone is conscious of that fluid field of possibilities.
Hi, Dan. This is in response to your conversation with Dr. Rowan on episode 713 about grooming. I feel like a pretty reasonable compromise that I don't think either of you mentioned would be trimming rather than shaving or waxing. I feel like that would mitigate some of the risks of shaving or waxing that Dr. Rowan cited as reasons why someone would prefer not to groom at all, while also helping the person who has a preference towards someone who's groomed kind of get closer to what they want. I know personally, I don't really have strong aesthetic preferences when it comes to grooming, but some trimming definitely can help streamline things a bit, especially in terms of oral sex.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. Better yet, use the Voice Memo app on your phone to record your question. It's better quality for broadcast. And email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. You have two more chances to catch Hump's Greatest Hits Volume 1 online this Thursday, July 2nd, and next Friday, July 10th. You'll see a collection of some of my favorite dirty movies from 2005 to 2018. And now is the perfect time to get busy making your own film for Hump. Win cash prizes. Go to humpfilmfest.com to get tickets to Hump's Greatest Hits Volume 1 and to find out more about making and submitting a film to Hump. Follow me on Twitter at Fake Dan Savage. Follow Representative Brandon Woodard on Twitter at Woodard. That's W-O-O-D-A-R-D, 4, numeral 4, Kansas. And follow Dr. Dimitri Daskalakis on Twitter at Dr. D-R Dimitri. That's D-E-M-E-T-R. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week for an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.